Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective. You know Brian from when he's been on the pod. They post episodes on Tuesday and Friday mornings bright and early. The NBA playoffs are in full swing, so be sure to check it out for the latest analysis and reactions. You can follow Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. Also, if you're looking for world-class soccer, ESPN Plus is where to find it. The best teams, the biggest stars, and over 20 international leagues and tournaments. La Liga, Bundesliga, MLS, FA Cup, Copa del Rey, and more. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com. The Right Time with Bomani Jones is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is that time of week where we have a guest join us, coming to us live from ESPN and Meadowlark Media. Howard Bryant, what's going on?
Good morning. How we doing?
Hey, man. We all right. did you watch the All-Star game last night?
I watched parts of the All-Star game. I watched enough of the All-Star game to know that I'm glad that there's, you know, no more home field advantage tied to an exhibition.
Oh, dude, I didn't realize they had taken that back. That was the worst.
Remember that?
The ultimate, like, trying to – nothing was wrong with the tie in the first place. I couldn't believe people were so caught up in the tie when it happened. And then they did that nonsense.
One of the great overreactions of all time, right? Mm-hmm. And then they tried to make an ad campaign around it next year. It's like the All-Star game. This time it counts.
This time it counts. And it really all just came down to people don't like Bud. How long has it been since we've had a commissioner anybody liked?
Ooh. You're probably going back to Giamatti, really. You got to go back into the 80s. But nobody liked him because of Pete Rose. Philadelphia couldn't stand him.
And he had the job for like 3 months.
And he had the job for 3 months and he died. And Faye Vincent, you know, it's just not a job people are going to like you. And I think you have to embrace your inner Gary Bettman. When it's like, when you come out, they're going to boo you, and that's part of your game.
You know, and it's funny because in retrospect on Vincent, I think he was the name of his book, The Last Commissioner.
The Last Commissioner.
He made the point basically that, you know, they're saying that this is going to be the end of independent commissionership, which is absolutely what happened. He got replaced by an owner. Right.
Got replaced by an owner. It was the facade. It was like, okay, hey, let's just not hide this anymore. Y'all, you work for us. And that's how it's going to be. And they've decided. And Manfred is actually the first commissioner since Faye Vincent that didn't have an equity stake in a team. Obviously because Bud was the Milwaukee guy for all that time. And I think that the owners, it's like, okay, hey, you know, for all these years, we've been selling to the public that the commissioner is the custodian of the game. Nah, dude, you work for us.
Yes. Yeah. Like, get it straight. Right. Bud got exactly. That job. Not even on some you work for us, but I work for me. Right? You guys, what's going on here is really bad for business for me.
That's right. But he also, you know, he pulled that Godfather 2 Hyman Roth thing. I'm going to make money for everybody. Hyman Roth always makes money for his partners. Bud made everybody rich. And Bud used to say all the time, he's like, look, Kennesaw Mountain Landis, he's not my model. My model is Pete Rozelle. I don't want any Mavericks. I don't want anybody out there getting out of line. If y'all stay in line, I'm going to make everybody rich. And if you notice in baseball, depending on how old you are, you come into the game, you had the crazy Ted Turners, you had the crazy George Steinbrenners, you had those Mavericks. They're all gone. Every owner in baseball now stays in line and causes no trouble.
Yeah, Bud oversaw like everything I don't like about the modernization of baseball, because it's like, I get it. Things have to move into the future, everything else. I hate playoff expansion. I hate interleague play, right? But the reason I don't like them, and it all ties to the All-Star game, right? Because you and I, you grew up in an American League city. I grew up in a National League city. And so when I was growing up, the All-Star game and the World Series were always like holidays for me, because the American League was like a completely different world, right?
Foreign country.
They had different umpires. They called strikes differently, right? Like the American League guys like to call their strikes out front. Or it seemed like they call balls with their hands, all of this. It just felt like a whole new world that you stumbled upon when you came across it. And I always thought that was part of the charm, because now they're not leagues, they're conferences, right? They're no different than the East and West Conference. They just don't have the geographic split. that they used to have. And I guess it was going to happen, whoever it was that wound up there. It just all wound up happening on Bud's watch. And so for me, that's when the All-Star game just kind of turned into, eh. Because you kind of see these guys all that. They come to your home park. They play against your teams. It's just not the same.
Yeah. No, and it's all different. And technology, I'm trying to be nice about this so you don't feel like a fossil. But I do feel like the technology has changed the utility of the All-Star game. It was going to happen no matter what, right? I grew up in Boston, so the only time we saw the National League was the All-Star game in the World Series. You'd get some game of the weeks on Saturdays. You know, you'd get, you know, Cubs, Cardinals, or you'd get Phillies, Mets, or whatever. You'd get the Dodgers. But for the most part, that was the only time you saw them. But now that you got cable and you got 200 channels and you can watch every game you want, and now you've got Interleague as well, the All-Star game's not special anymore. I mean, but that's just what progress did to it. So that was going to happen no matter what rule changes you came up with.
Yeah, and this All-Star game became the All-Star game of Shohei Ohtani. For some reasons, good. And for some reasons, like, you don't quite know what's going on here. Because Stephen A. Smith said something about whether, basically, a discussion of being the face of baseball and the fact that Ohtani does not speak English with reporters. I don't know if he speaks English. He might, right? Like, it was a shock to me to find out that Ichiro spoke English all along, just not to us, right? Mm-hmm. So I can't say he does not speak English, but he speaks through an interpreter. And Stephen A. made the point that, you know, this does not help in terms of being like the face of baseball, which turned into a gigantic ruckus. And I found that to be interesting. I thought his phrasing was certainly inelegant in the discussion, but what I thought in that discussion got lost was, if we're going to talk about the interpreter thing, I just mentioned Ichiro Suzuki. Hideo Nomo was like the first guy that I would go back to, 1995, and that was a phenomenon when he got here, right? Like, it was basically a repeat of Valenzuela and in Los Angeles, where both Nomo and Valenzuela would have a unique hook because of the high populations of Mexicans and Japanese people in the city that they played in. But Nomo was a giant star, and I ain't never hear him say nothing ever once.
Not once.
Ichiro was. Daisuke Matsuzaka did not become a giant star, but he was a big deal, if nothing else, again, while not speaking English. Like, I wonder if the thing and how much people who don't watch baseball all the time care about Ohtani. This seemed like a baseball issue more than anything else to do with language or anything along those lines.
Well, it is, and let's not forget Sammy Sosa hit 60 home runs 3 times, and you never heard him speak. And, you know, he didn't use a translator, but he didn't talk a lot.
Yeah.
And even if you look at the commercials that he did, he would sit there and smile. He wouldn't say a whole lot. And obviously, you knew he said nothing when he was in front of Congress. He was like, I don't speak English at all when he was in front of Congress.
Yo, he got a bad rap for that. He was really 100% on his side with that. He's like, yo, I mean, think about this. Roger Clemens had to go to trial based on what happened in front of Congress. Sammy's like, yo, I speak street English. This is go to jail English. Y'all trying to get me talking.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think that it is a baseball issue, but it's also an American issue. You know, you start looking at this and you're thinking, okay, Americans, English speakers around the world generally don't like other languages. If you go to London, they speak one language. It's not a bilingual place. You go to Australia, same thing. You come to the United States, it's speak English. That's who English speakers are. And that's part of that colonial dominance that, you know, that English speakers have always had, even though Australia is not really a colonial power. But still, I think that when you look at what was taking place here, and I think what Stephen A. said obviously is going to create a firestorm in a lot of ways, and it was definitely inelegant, but what he was saying wasn't inaccurate to how Americans think and how Americans act. And I think, and there's even one element of this that people didn't really talk about that they need to talk about, and that is the gap between the Asian player and the Latino player. When I was covering the Yankees, they took El Duque's translator from him, and Brian Cashman said, he's been here long enough, speak English, right? That's the organization doing that. That's not media doing that. That's your employer doing that. And you, when you think about the Asian players, they get all of the dispensation. Why? Because they are the biggest investment. You paid $150 million posting fee to get Hideki Matsui here. You're going to give him every opportunity he can to be whatever he needs to be. Whereas with the Latino players, you know, you sign 100 of them for $5,000. So right, they can succeed or fail, and they're not a huge financial investment.
And with the Latino players, they have people who interpret for them.
That's right, but they're not professionals.
They're not interpreters, right? It's some dude over here. Like, yo, can you interpret for your boy, right, Fast?
That's right.
And we mean by some dude, we ain't even talking about like some guy that work in a suit and tie.
No, you're talking about the backup. You're talking about the backup third baseman. I remember Luis Soho used to be out there interpreting for the other Latino players.
Yeah,
I was like, you're not an interpreter. You're an infielder.
Right. Well, the thing that happened with the comments to me, and Stephen A. to be clear, has apologized for it and everything that came with it. Like, I'm not here to pile on. I think.
And you could also make an argument, Bo, that he over apologized considering the things that went down during the week.
Yeah, like, I just think there's a discussion to be had, right?
Yeah.
Because part of why I think that people got offended, because in my hearing of it, I did not think that he said anything that was offensive to Ohtani. If there was someone who was going to be offended, it was the people who felt like, well, wait a minute, I like him. What you trying to say about me? But I'm telling you, I lived in Miami for 4 years. And if there was a lesson that I learned from my time in Miami, it is that language is the great segregator. People get really uncomfortable by the idea that they don't understand what somebody is saying. That's even when somebody's speaking the same language as them and just using big-ass words, right? Mm-hmm. Like when people feel like they don't understand, that becomes a disconnect. The other thing I thought about, and this is, I think, just a fair question to ask. We agree that personalities are what engage fans, especially in this era with the social media and everything else. Like the issue with Mike Trout, where like baseball can't make a star out of Mike Trout, and baseball will tell you, we'd like to, except he won't let us, right? Like, he does not engage in those ways. If Ohtani is speaking through a filter, I can understand the argument that that impedes with the engagement of people in the United States, which is still the primary market for baseball and will always be the primary market for baseball. So I thought the reaction to it was somewhat interesting just because I heard it and it really made me think, oh, you think he talking about you? But I would... there's not a person who's going to jump up other than people with like a political agenda for trolling, basically. There's nobody that's going to jump up and be like, I don't understand what he's saying and it's a problem for me. Like, nobody want to be that dude to then jump into it. At the same time, this dude hit 33 home runs in the first half and is a legitimate top of the rotation starting player. There ain't nothing like this. Like, I don't even think that Babe Ruth played every day and pitched. It was just two things he could do.
There's two things he did. That's right. And that's right. And what you're watching is absolutely unique. And it's even unique when you compare him to Ruth once again. Ruth was a pitcher for the first 7 years of his career. Ruth was a hitter the rest, right? So that, it wasn't like he was out there on, he wasn't out there giving you 32 starts while he was hitting 60 home runs.
Right.
Right. Even he wasn't doing that. So I think that what you've got here is a completely unique talent. And also you've got, it's the Angels, and it's baseball. You're right. It's a baseball problem as well, because baseball is really expert at creating problems. And baseball is really good at that. And it's like, there's so many different examples where when I saw this story sort of unfold, the first thing that sort of hit me with it was, okay, this is a last stand. You're right. Language is a great segregator because people treat language like the last stand. You are foreign and you are coming to take something that's mine, which is very much consistent with what's happening in this country already. Everything is being treated as a last stand, right? I mean, this is exactly where we're at. And so for this to come up during this time was even more explosive. But there's all kinds of precedents for it. We've heard this stuff before when you're talking about encroachments. You remember when Andy Rooney was talking about, baseball is really too hard to follow back on 60 Minutes, 10, 12 years ago. It's too hard to follow because there were too many Hernandezes and too many Lopezes in the game. I'm like, damn, did you really just say that? that the game is getting too Latin for you, that we can't follow it anymore? And you had it in hockey. You think about it too. Americans don't even go to movies with subtitles. They just won't go to foreign films either, right? So this is an issue that is not, it wasn't like Stephen A. said anything that people don't practice. He just said it out loud. And he said, and he was saying, and he wasn't really offended. He wasn't offending Ohtani at all. He was talking about a mechanism that people just, that they embrace here, whether we like it or not, speak English. I had a dude once, I was in Fenway Park. At Fenway Park, sitting in the dugout, early Sunday morning baseball, you know, really easy morning. And one of the scouts from the Red Sox had come up to me, and he was like, man, I had to go to Target, and I had to go buy some you know, diapers for my grandson. And all the instructions on the Huggies were in Spanish. I'm like, one, they're also in English if you turn the box upside down. And two, do you really need instructions on how to put a diaper on? But he was offended by this because, once again, what did it signify to him? They're coming. They're taking over. Why aren't they here? You know, when you come here, you speak English, and it's no different than when you go to Europe, when you talk about a lot of the immigration issues that are taking place in Europe right now. You go to the Netherlands. Why aren't you assimilating? You go to France. Remember all the stuff with France, with the religion and, you know, wearing burqas and everything else. Why aren't you assimilating? And they're going to ban them when you go swimming. All of it, it's all the same culture war in its own ways. Just some of it is considered more important than others because it's sports.
No, I'm telling you, that's why I think everybody need to go live in Miami for a year. It'll humble you.
That's the one, right?
Like, Miami will humble you. They are like, maybe they gonna try to speak some English with you. Maybe not. But especially don't go into they stuff, right? Like, that's the big one. So I grew up in Houston, which obviously has a very large Mexican population. But the expectation is that the Mexicans are gonna learn how to speak some English. Mm-hmm. Right, like one way or another. And if you go into a Mexican restaurant, I don't care how Mexican the part of town is, somebody in there gonna speak English. Go to a Cuban, a Dominican, a Colombian, a Venezuelan restaurant, whatever it is in Miami, especially if you're over there in their part of town.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they do, maybe they don't. Or number three, maybe they do, and they just not gonna speak it to you. They don't feel like it. Today.
That's right.
Right?
And we'll
be out here going like this. We'll be out here pantomiming. Like, can I get a fork? Can I get that? We just gonna be doing that. They looking at me like, what do you mean? You know, and I'm trying to dig into the Spanish I learned working at Fuddruckers. Tenado. Oh, okay, now you got it. You knew I was talking about a fork. No, man. Yeah. Like Miami's just so totally different about that because of the nature of how the place became more populated in the last 60 years.
Well, that's right.
And they got clout.
But once again, ownership. This is ours. I mean, all we do is fight for space in this world, right? Ownership. I remember when I would come back from Guatemala, I was like, oh, great, because I lived in San Francisco. I was going to, I'm going to use a little bit of Spanish now that I get back. So you're in San Francisco. San Francisco was very similar to what you were talking about in Texas. You'd walk in, try to go order your burrito in Spanish, and they would respond to you in English, which was, don't even try it.
It's very nice of you,
but look, man, I'm working. I'm off at 5 o'clock, man. You know, don't try to say tenedor. You want a fork? Here's a fork. Yeah. All right? I mean, so you got to navigate that as well. And I think that the Miami piece of it, that's the only one really in the country. Miami is a bilingual city. You're going to have to navigate that when you get there, whereas everybody else, the default is English. And if it's not, then it becomes a culture war.
Well, I'll tell you another Miami story on that. So I moved to Miami in 2013 to do Highly Questionable with Dan, and we filmed at Imagina Studios at first in Hialeah, right? Which there's a lot of Spanish language television. I was so confused that people kept saying the name of the studio. I'm like, what are you talking about? Imagina, Imagina. I was like, oh, that's how you say that. My bad, right? Mm-hmm. But everybody there was a native Spanish speaker except for Dan. And so before I got there, everybody just spoke Spanish all the time on the set. And when I got there, people would ask me if it's okay if they spoke Spanish. And I'm like, I mean, if you're not talking to me, I know the words to listen out for to tell if we got a problem. You know what I'm saying? I know I've been around enough. I know if y'all talking about me, I can figure that part out.
I understand that, you know.
Yeah, but to them it was like they were going to do, and I appreciated it in large measure, but they were going to do me the courtesy so I didn't feel like I didn't understand what was going on. Because again, that's the thing, language is the segregator. But I was like, no, guys, I'm the new guy here. You go ahead and do that. But these are things that I think for people who live in most places in the country that don't come up. Like they just don't think about it. If you're from the Midwest, this isn't a thing that comes up. Even if you're from New York, this isn't a thing that comes up. Like, you deal with people who speak different languages, but everybody, unless, again, like maybe if you're in Washington Heights, you know, or at least what Washington Heights was, because that's flipping up a little bit, you know,
yeah.
where it's theirs and everybody's around, you know, everybody's part of the same crew, then it goes that way. But otherwise, man, this is this conversation, I felt the way that it ultimately played out had so much to do with what our modern discourse has become.
Yep.
And we ain't talking, man. We just want to scream. We just want to be mad. You know, we just want to have something to be angry about. Like Stephen A. also apologized to some stuff he said about the Nigerians. Ain't nobody out here talking about that one, right? Like that didn't turn it. People didn't even lump the two things together, right? Like that one became the thing that we decided we was going to be mad at, and then everybody decided to then bring down the hammer. So, like Ohtani, whatever the face of baseball is, if that even means anything anymore, right? Like that could be Shohei Ohtani. It absolutely 100% could be. Of course, the Angels are going to have to not be 9.5 games out of first place. And B, yeah, I think a lot of people would engage more easily if he spoke the same language that they spoke.
Yeah, but I think that's obvious. I mean, I think that's the case. But let me throw this at you. Does this happen if Ohtani's playing in New York? I don't remember ever hearing Hideki Matsui speak, and everybody loved him. Had the nickname Godzilla and the whole thing. He did his thing, and he was out there winning, and they were making the playoffs and going to the World Series and the whole thing. And so part of this is the fact that the Angels are garbage and that they need the Angels. They need some other team. You need all the help you can get when your best players are in Anaheim, because it's not even L.A. So so we're trying to find some way here. But you're right. In terms of culture war and the one piece of this that I get in terms of the times is with all the stop Asian hate, with all the violence against Asian Americans taking place in the country right now, I could see a little bit why that one rose above the Nigerians, because there is an issue taking place in this country right now. And so I got that piece of it. But yeah, social media and all of it in general, it all exists to get you fired, right? Everything that we do right now, your social media, why is there no edit button on Twitter? Because it is being used as a binding, permanent public transcript to get your ass fired. and that's also a huge piece of this.
Well, let me ask this, because we talk about the Anaheim part, and you mentioned Anaheim is not L.A., and that's big, because it's not simply that it's not L.A., because it is a different place. It's a different place, right?
That's right.
I do wonder about how Ohtani would play nationally if he was playing for the Dodgers.
I was going to say, for the Dodgers, Fernando didn't speak a lot of English.
Right. Fernando didn't speak a lot of English, but L.A. County... Like, he was more representative of L.A. County than he ever would have been of Orange County, right? And so Ohtani being a guy in Orange County, because my thing is this, it's hard to become a big national star if you don't become, like, the big local star. Like, if you're not the man in your city, it's hard for you to become the man everywhere else. And Ohtani, again, we talk about him a lot on SportsCenter and those kinds of places, obviously, because what he's doing is so completely different, right? Like, it's such a different world that he's playing in right now, because it's not like it's 33 homers and they're barely going over the fence. He is mashing these things. Mm-hmm. He's running like a deer. Like, he's doing all of those things. And if he played for the Dodgers, who would be good, this is all over the place. Like, this is huge. Right. But I don't know if anybody can be that quote-unquote face of baseball like that anymore, because ultimately, baseball is a local sport.
It's a regional sport.
I don't mean that in a bad way.
Yeah, there are no more Reggies coming.
No. Like, who's the last? Is Barry Bonds like the last big national star we had?
Well, actually, you know what? I ask this question all the time. Who is the last baseball superstar who was across the country, everybody's dude, without drugs or negativity? It's Griffey.
Yeah.
It's Griffey. He's the last one. Ken Griffey for president, that Nintendo game, the whole thing. He's the last one. That's damn near 30 years ago.
Yeah, can we throw Derek Jeter kind of in there?
No.
Don't think so.
I don't know. I don't know if, I mean, maybe.
Well, he's certainly the last super famous baseball player in that regard that fits your criteria.
That's true. But when you were outside of New York, were people talking about Derek Jeter the way they talked about Reggie or Griffey?
No.
I don't think they were.
No. Who's the last baseball player to have, like, major commercials, like, for real like that, you know?
Griffey? Yeah, I mean, once again, you're going back 30 years. And that is damning, right? For your core business, it's damning. So, yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot. And I don't think people are even having this conversation if he's playing for the Dodgers, because you know, you don't need that because you're the Dodgers, right? There's also the name that comes with it. What baseball is really saying is that these other franchises need help.
Yeah.
Right? That's one thing Hank Aaron used to say all the time, is that if I played in New York instead of Atlanta and Milwaukee, my whole career is different. And so, I mean, he didn't say it as a complaint. He just said it in terms of recognition, how you were seen.
Right. So, Howard, as we record this, I am going to do Highly Questionable after this. On Monday, we talked about Team USA losing to Nigeria. On Tuesday, we talked about Team USA losing to Australia. Today, we are not going to talk about Team USA winning over Argentina.
No,
dude.
Why? You're supposed to win. This is the team. You know what? And that is the thing about it, right? It's like there's a little bit of this happening in tennis, but it happened so badly and so overwhelmingly in tennis that you had to just succumb to it, which was this game belonged to the United States. McEnroe, Connors, Chrissy, Tracy Austin, you know, Sampras, Agassi, whatever you want. But guess what? The world done passed America by when it comes to tennis. And so you just had to take that L, right? We are not willing to do that in basketball. We are going to say forever, this is the American sport. We're supposed to dominate it. We will absolutely play all kinds of lip service to the global game. We love the global game as long as we're still beating everybody's ass.
Right, right? But we're not happy when they win. Like that's the thing. Like the Yankees have all those World Series, but when they win, people in New York are happy, right? Like all the places that dominate, but when they win, they're happy.
That's USA. Actually not true. I will argue that point. When the Yankees lose during the regular season, nobody's happy.
Yes.
Right? When the Yankees win during the regular season, they're kind of happy because the it's not go time yet. I will grant you. Now, if the United States wins gold and people are like, nah, well, you know, you're kind of supposed to. I mean, this is the spoils, right? But I also think that one of the differences, and I do agree with you, even though it sounds like I'm contradicting you, I'm not. One of the differences is that the United States really has only gotten its ass handed to them twice, right? They got robbed in 72. They got whooped in 88. And then, of course, they got crushed, you know, which necessitated the redeem team. The Yankees, on the other hand, have had really dark periods. So people remember and now they know how to celebrate. They know that, you know what, this can get taken away from us. If the United States went 2 or 3 Olympics or world championships and never quite got there, and you'd be like, oh, wow, the world caught up with us, then you would see, I think, a lot more celebration when they win. But right now, we are still living off 92. We are supposed to kill everybody. We're not even happy when they win by 10. We're still in mode that you're supposed to win all these international games by 20, 30 points.
Dog, and that's the thing. Like, I talked about this on Monday when you talk about 88. They didn't even get whooped in 88. They lost that game by 6 points, right? Like, now, I think there were other reasons that the discussion of them getting whooped in 88 got ramped up. Don't forget who coached that team.
I was going to say, that's the John Thompson. No, race did not play a factor in any of this. Never mind, right? And you know, it was like, him, too, and it was John Thompson.
Yes, yeah, it wasn't just any old black dude, right? Like, it was like the face of all of this. Like, they lost the game by 6 points because David Robinson just got off the boat and had to deal with Arvydas Sabonis, and we were like, never again. Never again.
Never again. It's true. Never forget.
Yes, fly meet sledgehammer. Here we go, mm-hmm. Right? And it was like, oh, the world has caught up to us. In 88, the world hadn't caught up to nothing. It's almost ironic. Right. What made the world catch up was that sledgehammer. They brought out the sledgehammer in 92, and then the world was like, oh, this is kind of
fun. You sound like Vision in the Avengers. our power inherently invites conflict.
Yes. And that's what it was, right? And so it's what is interesting to me is the cyclical nature of it, because what happened in 04, really, A, Larry Brown is not built to coach like a short-term situation.
And he's certainly not Thompson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's certainly not built to coach a team overrun with children, right? And yes. That's what that team had, was a lot of young dudes, and Larry Brown hates young players. So Carmelo Anthony's mm-hmm. over there on the bench with a towel over his head because he's not getting any burn, you know, and all this stuff, right? Bad fit. But the other thing was,
they're coming for you.
Yeah, that's what I say. That's so New York. Hold on. Let me let them go past. But the other thing was, it was just guys not going. Like, I looked at the list, and I was like, the team wasn't that bad. But when you look at it, no, they just had, like, Richard Jefferson and Emeka Okafor were on that team, for example, right? But you had Tim Duncan, you had Allen Iverson, you had Stephon Marbury, you had Lamar Odom, you had a couple other guys, but they just weren't loaded. And this year, I wouldn't go playing no damn Olympics this year either if I had just played an NBA season. And so this year, they don't have the guys. The guys, inexplicably, Kevin Durant's there, because I wouldn't go there if I was Kevin Durant. We got Draymond Green, who most of us think is close to finished, right? Yep. Kevin Love is on this team, and I don't know if he's finished, but it ain't the beginning.
He's close to finished.
Yeah, he's close to finished. Like, the team is an odd mix, and then it's Popovich, who is a Larry Brown guy, and I think they've lost four out of their last six games. So it goes back to the previous international tournament. And you just kind of got to look around a little bit and just be like, this seems to be a bad fit, and it's a COVID situation as much as anything else. Not that guys have COVID, but that this is a chaos year, and the rest of the world, their teams have the continuity that the United States doesn't have this year.
Well, continuity has always been the issue, right? The issue was our talent will beat their continuity. That's always been the formula. And that formula doesn't quite necessarily fly right now. And then we always talk about basketball as being a best player wins game. Do we have the best players right now? Like, internationally, do we have the best players?
Yes.
LeBron's not there.
Not there.
Steph's not there. I mean, there are other players in the world right now where you're going to have to deal with them in a way that you didn't really have to deal with them before.
Well, what we get, and I talked about this a little bit too, is internationally we get different versions of dudes that we ain't think is that good. Patty Mills, for example. International Patty Mills is a different animal than NBA Patty Mills. I don't really understand why that's the case, right? But he looks like a different dude that's out there. And again, like you say, these dudes have been playing together forever, because this is what I think is a major difference between those countries and the United States, is that if you are an NBA level guy from one of those countries, there ain't no dude coming up from under to take your spot. Like, you're going to have your spot on that international team. Their hierarchy seems to be much more established at the top from year to year to year. With the United States, some of those guys might not come. Some of those guys might wind up being replaced. But they fixed the continuity thing after 04 because they recognize that's what we don't have. We need to have continuity. And this year has been one that's thrown that completely out of whack.
Yeah, and you're also revered. If you are an international player who's balling in the NBA, even if you're a sixth man, when you go home, you're the man.
Yes.
I mean, you know, because you're playing against them. And if you can compete with them, then you... Those international players, that first wave and second wave of international players, they are the ones who essentially built those programs, right? So absolutely, when you're Patty Mills, when you come home, you're walking around like you're an all-star.
Right.
So it gives you more confidence.
And then you get these countries like France, whose best player, by the way, might be playing like the U19. Have you seen this big, long dude they got that's down there? But France now, you got like a Rudy Gobert, you got a Nick Batum, you got some other guys I'm not thinking of. Tony Parker has now retired. Like, if your country, so Serbia, for example, I don't know what they're doing, you know, for the Olympics or whatever, but I think Serbia has seven players in the NBA. But that means seven dudes that could play for Serbia in the Olympics. Seven of them. That ain't bad.
It's not bad at all.
You know,
it's
you're really only going to play eight dudes when it really comes down to it. They got those guys. Another thing that's changed, too, about this international ball, they ain't got no respect for the flop no more.
That's right. Well, and the other piece of it, too, is that, and it's always been an issue, is that, I don't know about you, because you watch more about this than I have over the years, but international basketball still looks weird to me. the whole trapezoid and Elaine and everything.
Oh, they got the trapezoid out. They got the trapezoid out.
It's gone, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it just still feels like, and also the goaltending rules and all that, like the international basketball just feels more comfortable to the to international teams than it does. It seems like the United States players still need a little bit of time to get used to how international ball does not look like the NBA.
No.
It's not played like the NBA. It looks like a very different sport.
Now, the trapezoid Elaine, that's the beginning of the death of the postman, right? Like, as that went, because we would look at the trapezoid Elaine and be like, oh, that looks weird. But we really lost sight of, no, it makes it really hard to play in the post, because now we're moving the post out a little bit farther, right? Like, they're like, oh, okay, this makes things a little bit difficult when you go wind up playing this game. But, like, I look at this now with this team the U.S. has, and I guess I'm more interested in the Olympics as the tournament. Like, the tournament itself, I think, is going to be interesting, and I think it's going to wind up being competitive. I just wish people in this country actually rooted for the team as opposed to simply evaluating it.
Well, I think I think that comes with something else, which is something that it's part and parcel with this entire conversation, this last stand conversation about who Americans think they are. And basketball, from an identity standpoint, is a really big piece of that. Do you have professional respect for your opponent? We don't have professional respect for our opponents, which is why when they lose, we're like, what happened? Maybe the other guy was better. I mean, it's like what Ron Washington used to say all the time. We don't have to be the best team. We got to be the best team on this day. I mean, that's the mantra. And I think that it's like what John McEnroe used to say. Pressure is the possibility that you could lose. We don't want that internationally. We want sledgehammer. More sledgehammer, right? And if we don't get sledgehammer, then clearly we've got a leadership problem, or clearly we've got a coaching problem or whatever. But the bottom line is that the world is forcing us to have professional respect for our opponents.
Yeah, like the world has kind of caught up. I think that's the best way to put it. The world has kind of caught up. And what the world catching up was, and this is what they learned in 04, we just couldn't send any old body over there no more. Because like, when
what
you
are we going to do when the world surpasses us, like in tennis? What are you going to do when now you're the underdog?
Well,
that ever happens in basketball.
No, but you think about this, right? So 04, well, really, we have been treating the Olympic team as like a coronation. Like, we were just sending guys to give them the honor of having gone to the Olympics. And that was with coaches and everything else. Yeah. In large part, Popovich coaching this team is kind of an honor. Like, when you look at the guys who coached the Olympic teams throughout all those years, it was very clear that this was a lifetime achievement award.
It really was.
That you received for coaching that team.
There's one thing on the mantle that you don't have, and it's a medal.
You need a medal. Right. That's why nobody did it twice, right? Like with Krzyzewski, where Krzyzewski did this for 3 straight Olympics. Nobody had done that before because it was a coronation. That's what the world caught up to, that we just couldn't just show up and decide that we were going to ultimately win it. But if you go through, like I did this the other day where I was looking at the leaderboard in win shares per 48 minutes, because I think that's a pretty strong metric there for, you know, who the best players in the league are, is win shares per 48 minutes. It basically lines up straight to the MVP. And so if I give you a list or let you look at the top players in win shares per 48 minutes, I mean, it's still pretty much Americans, but here's who's not there. Yeah. Third in the league this year was Jimmy Butler, not playing for the U.S. Kawhi Leonard, obviously, not playing for the U.S. There's some fakos like Montrezl Harrell, who's really not that good, but even still, he's on that list. James Harden, not there. Zion Williamson, who should be there, not there. Steph Curry, not there. Chris Paul, not there. Mike Conley, not there. Kyrie Irving, not there. LeBron James, not there. We can go up and down the list. We are sending guys that we've learned you can't win by sending that caliber of player there and just expecting to win.
That's right. Well, that's why I was asking, are we rolling out the best squad?
Oh, right? I was thinking about the best squad we could roll out. No, we are not.
No,
I still
not.
Think they have the most talented team in the world.
Yes, and that's true. However, there's a huge difference between the best and your best. Are we putting out the best team we can put out? No, but because you're putting out the best team, because you still have the best team, doesn't mean the gap is that big.
Right.
It doesn't mean it's that huge. And it also undermines, like, what do I used to say when you're playing, right? Don't make superstars out of these guys. One of the things that Americans have always had going for them is just by the names, you destroy belief. How many quarters do you win just by knowing that you're playing against LeBron James? Right? How many quarters do you lose, rather, knowing that, oh, I'm going against America's A-list? Right? Now, we're going to put America's B or C or D list out there. They may still be better, but now we got a chance because there's no necessarily an intimidation factor. I mean, when you play against Michael Jordan, you lost points just because he's there.
Right. And those dudes had like never played against Michael Jordan before, right? Yep. Like the funniest thing about the Dream Team that I did not really have a grasp of as was happening, but through the documentaries and stuff since that I got, is all these dudes that was like stopping and taking pictures.
And taking pictures and getting autographs.
In the middle of the game. They knew what it was. In the middle of the game, they were stopping and taking pictures. They ain't doing that no more.
No. I'm not here for your autograph.
Look, man, we sent Jeremy Grant out there on this squad. Jeremy Grant. That's all I'm saying. Like, I don't know. And it's just weird, right? Like, this is the thing is I've always said the thing that the Kaepernick thing showed us about the leagues and everything else is basically the leagues believe that people hate the players more than they love the games that they watch them play. Right.
Well, and there's your money, right?
Right. And the NBA has done so much to make sure that you like the guys that they tried out there. They really have. They want you to like the guys. And they've got, by and large, a bunch of good kids out there, a bunch of nice young guys. People still don't actually like them. There's not like, man, I sure hope these guys can get it better. It's just like, yo, we stink. Not going to watch a game, going to have everything to say about it. Not going to watch a single game of it. And if they win a gold medal, they ain't going to be, no parades. Ain't going to be no Hacksaw Jim Duggan action. Ain't going to be no, ho, ain't going to be none of that. None whatsoever.
All right. And that's the question. Hey, man, did you hear the United States lost to Australia? Heard about it. Did you watch the game? No.
Right. Well, the thing is, too, Australia is like low-key good.
That's the
thing that people don't quite. Let me tell you what's really funny about Australia, though. I was looking up their national team on the wiki, and they have been playing internationally in the Oceania bracket. Dog, is there anything more unfair than Australia international competition against those little bitty islands over there? Tonga even got 12 people. Tonga got 12 people that play basketball. Steven Adams and who? His kinfolk?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
They got 36 guys, and we're going to find 12 of them to play basketball.
Yes. Like, I take a lot of Sporkle quizzes, and Oceania be kicking my ass. I'll be knowing the names of the places, and once I know them, I can barely spell them. I'd be like, this one kind of like that. I'd be hoping spell check. Come in and help me out and rescue me for Tuvalu or Nauru. I think that Nauru. I'm not trying to be snide. This is my ignorance, not them. I'm just saying, it didn't come up when I was learning. I don't even know how long these places been countries.
Right.
Every now and then in the world, country pop up. I'd be like, yo, like, I know this. I've known this for a while, but I don't know how many people know this. Did you know that there's a South Sudan now? Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. Luol Deng is from South Sudan. Now, a whole new Sudan popped up. I remember when I was in, like, 10th grade or 11th grade, I met this dude I'd never met before from school, and he was from Eritrea. And they were like, and people would tell me he's from Eritrea. It's a country in Africa. I'm like, ain't no country in Africa called no Eritrea. Like white people telling me they don't.
I didn't even know how to pronounce it. I thought it was Eritrea.
Yeah. Ain't no country in Africa called Eritrea. Well, Eritrea had become a country. And our schools, they ain't bothered to tell you. And we ain't buy no new maps. You know what I'm saying? Yep. Like, it just looked like Ethiopia still. They didn't tell us nothing. All these places in the world, I got no idea about. And Australia is out there kicking all their asses in basketball and everything else that they play on the way to the Olympics. At least they were.
The only reason I know that Eritrea or Eritrea exists is because almost every cab driver I ever had in Seattle was from there. I'm like, is the whole damn country here?
It was crazy. We have a mutual friend from Eritrea.
We do?
That's where Master's from. Master Tesfaye.
Is he from there? I didn't know that.
Yeah, because you just thought he was Ethiopian. See? and by the way, from what
just
I've gleaned.
Just got exposed.
Yeah, and from what I've gleaned, they don't take that very well.
I was going to say, they don't like that, right?
That is the equivalent of speaking Spanish to someone from Brazil. They really don't like that.
Exactly. I mean, the same thing, right? No.
No, we were colonized by somebody else. Thank you very much.
And it's a different language, fool.
Yeah, yeah, and not even close. Like, that's the one thing about it. Like, okay, it's kind of like Spanish. Nah, it's actually kind of like Italian.
Nah, Brazil, exactly. I'm like, yeah, I don't know about that.
So can you tell the people, I guess you can, tell the people the project that you're wrapping up right now. I want to let them, make sure they know about this before we get out of here.
I am finishing a biography of Rickey Henderson called Rickey, the Life and Legend of an American Original, and he is an American Original. Rickey, you know, it's funny. Like, they always say, like, when I did the Hank Aaron biography, people told me that at the end of the day, at some point you're going to hate your subject. And that really was never true with Hank Aaron. That was never really true with Hank Aaron. With Rickey? Rickey's amazing. I mean, it's just, we, you know, and it's funny that to sort of come full circle here, because we're talking about Ohtani and talking about Trout and talking about face of the game. One of the reasons why Rickey is so rehabilitated right now is because the game hasn't had a personality like him since.
Yeah.
I mean, just a guy who is just bursting personality. And when you were talking about Ohtani, one of the things that I was thinking about was, we are marveling at what he's doing, but we're not marveling at him, because we don't know him. Whereas with Rickey, you eventually get to do both, because that personality just comes out. You know, he's got bags of personality.
Yeah, and he is, and he is a Charles Barkley-like figure in the sense that you kind of had to be there to, like, fully get what it was. Mm-hmm. But the advanced numbers tell you that he actually was better than we thought he was at the time. Because we thought,
well, at the time, I was going to say, well, at the time, everybody thought he was not as good as he was, as he was. And that is the thing when people talk about Rickey, because Rickey was ahead of his time in so many ways, and Rickey was difficult to play with, and Rickey was all these different things, and he was on his own program and quirky and this and that. Rickey Henderson was ballin'.
Well, he had a fundamental understanding of baseball that I've never heard anybody else articulate, which is, my goal is to score.
It's to,
like,
score
you don't
runs.
Hear people talk about baseball in terms of, I'm here to score.
Yeah. What is the point of the game?
Yeah.
To score runs.
And so people think about, well, I'm going to swing the bat and then get other people to score. Rickey's like, no, no, no. I'm going to score. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get here. I'm going to get there. We're going to get here to there real fast. And,
well, and that's why, go ahead.
I say, and the thing we lost with Rickey, because we're coming up on time, but this is the biggest one. What if Rickey Henderson were not trying to be like his friends when he was a kid, which is why he bats right-handed even though he throws left?
That's
if Rickey Henderson had been a left-handed hitter, what are we talking about?
What are we talking about? More stolen bases, more hits, more home runs. I mean, he, in probably in a lot of ways, is even better, and he was unreal then. I mean, and I was just going to say, the last thing about that was, when people say, here's the thing about Rickey, he could have been even better. How much better could he have been? He stole 1,400. He stole 1,400 bases. I mean, the numbers. He's in that category where you just start looking, and it wasn't just the fact that he was a great player. He demolished the competition. He held the all-time stolen base record for 12 years as an active player. You usually break records at the end, not in the middle.
He broke that record like in his 13th year or something like that.
He was 32 when he broke the all-time record.
He also stole like 40 bases at 37.
He stole 66 bases at 39.
That's what it was. That's what it was.
1998, 66.
Moral of the story, stretch. Right, he and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar figured that out. The key to longevity is flexibility.
Is flexibility, and I don't have that.
He happens to the best of us. But that, Howard Bryant, check him out at ESPN, Meadowlark Media. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing three times a week. Daniel Dobbin, David Presley handling everything behind the scenes today. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.